The rain had stopped by the time Pearl reached the townhouse gate, but the sky still held its breath, heavy and gray, the way it did before it decided to drown you again. Fifth Avenue was quiet in a way the rest of the city never was. No cartwheels clattering on wet cobblestone, no newsboys shouting about the latest scandal. Just the slow drip of water from wrought iron balconies and the occasional passage of a carriage, whose occupant would never know Pearl Casey was crouched in the shadow of a pillar, watching the back entrance like a stray dog watching a butcher's door. She had been waiting for 20 minutes. 20 minutes of cold seeping through her boots, of her shoulder throbbing in time with the distant tick-tick-tick of a clock somewhere inside the house, of wondering whether Astrid Blackwell even lived here anymore or whether the townhouse was just another costume she wore when society demanded it. The door opened. Not the front door, the back, the service entrance where the vegetables arrived and the laundry left and the servants came and went without being noticed by anyone who mattered. A woman in a dark dress stepped out, a shawl pinned tight at her throat, her face pale and drawn in the gaslight. She did not see Pearl. She never saw Pearl. That was the thing about women like Astrid Blackwell. They built their worlds so carefully that anything beneath the surface simply did not exist. Pearl stood, her knee popped, she ignored it. She followed at a distance, keeping to the alleys, watching the woman move with the brisk efficiency of someone who had somewhere to be and nowhere she wanted to be seen. They walked 6 blocks, past row houses with drawn blinds and corner stores with their lights burning through the evening, until the woman turned down a narrow street that smelled of river mud and coal smoke and ended at a door Pearl knew by memory. Elena's building. Pearl's stomach tightened. She had been here yesterday. She had slept here tonight. She had left her notebook behind, and the notebook was gone, and Alina's children were still in that basement, and Pearl had made a promise she wasn't sure she could keep. The woman at the door did not knock. She raised a hand, rapped 3 times in a specific rhythm too quick, one slow, and the door opened before her knuckles came down a second time. Pearl ducked into the alley, pressing herself against the brick, feeling the damp seep through her coat, holding her breath. Inside, the door closed. The lock turned. And Pearl Casey stood in the rain on a street she did not recognize, with cold water running down her neck and a terrible certainty blooming in her chest like a bruise. Astrid Blackwell was here. Not at her townhouse on Fifth Avenue. Not at the Academy of Music or the orphanage or any of the dozen charitable institutions that bore her name and lined her pockets. Here, in the Lower East Side. In a tenement basement that smelled of boiled cabbage and wet wool. With a seamstress who could stitch a seam so fine you'd need a magnifying glass to see it. Why? Pearl closed her eyes. She counted to 10. She opened her eyes and looked at the door again, as if staring hard enough might make it reveal its secrets. It did not. Doors never did. That was the problem with doors. They were just wood and metal and hinges. The meaning was always on the other side. She waited another 15 minutes. Then she went to the front of the building, circled the block, and found a window on the ground floor that was cracked open an inch, just enough to admit the smell of cabbage and the sound of a child coughing. She put her fingers in the gap and pushed. The window groaned. The coughing stopped. Pearl froze. Then the coughing started again, weaker this time, and she slipped through the crack, dropping onto a floor that was damp and sticky and smelled of mildew. And something else, something sharper, chemical, like the varnish her father used on the clock cases he repaired. The basement was small. One room, maybe 12 feet square, with a cot against one wall, a table against another, and a stove in the corner that had not been lit in days. 2 chairs, a wash basin on a crate, a single oil lamp burning low, its flame casting long shadows against walls that wept moisture. And in the center of it all, sitting at the table with her back to the window, was Alina Rossi. But she was not alone. Across from her sat a woman Pearl had never seen before, older, perhaps 60, with silver hair pinned severely at the nape of her neck, wearing a dress that cost more than this entire building. Her hands were folded on the table. Her posture was perfect. Her face was calm. And between them, spread across the table like evidence in a trial, were pages, dozens of them, handwritten. Pearl recognized the handwriting immediately. It was her father's. She stopped breathing. The older woman was speaking in a voice that was cold and precise and mournful, the way a surgeon spoke when explaining why the patient would not survive. He understood the arrangement, she was saying. He understood that some things are bigger than justice, bigger than revenge, bigger than a daughter. Elena's hands were shaking. Pearl could see it from where she stood, hidden in the shadows, her boots silent on the damp floor. "I told him," Elena whispered. "I told him it was wrong, but he said it was necessary. He said," she stopped, swallowed, looked down at her hands. "He said if he didn't do it, you would come for her, for Pearl." The silver-haired woman did not flinch. "I would do whatever was necessary to protect my family. Your family is not my enemy, Signorina Rossi, but your silence is required, as was his." Pearl's father. The words landed like stones in water, rippling outward, touching everything, changing the shape of the pond. Her father, sitting at this table, making a deal with her. With the woman whose name he had written in his own blood on the marble steps of Grand Central Depot. She had spent 3 months believing he was hunting Astrid Blackwell. She had believed he had discovered the syndicate's true architect and was closing in, that the silk knot in his pocket was a warning, that the blood on the steps was a message left for her to find. She had believed he was brave. She had believed he was fighting. He was not fighting. He was protecting her. The realization hit her with the force of a physical blow. She staggered backward, her shoulder catching the wall, and a small sound escaped her throat, half gasp, half sob, barely audible over the coughing from somewhere upstairs. Elena looked up. The silver-haired woman turned. Pearl ran. She did not think. She did not plan. She simply moved, her boots slipping on the damp floor, her hand finding the doorframe, pulling herself upright, stumbling into the hallway, taking the stairs two at a time, her shoulder screaming, her breath coming in ragged bursts. She burst out onto the street and into the rain, which had started again, of course, because the sky had finally decided, and ran. She did not look back. She did not slow. She ran past corner stores and shuttered bakeries and a church whose steeple cut through the rain like a finger pointing at God. She ran until her lungs burned and her legs shook and the cold had soaked through every layer of clothing and settled in her marrow. She ran because if she stopped, she would have to think. And if she thought, she would have to process the fact that her father, the man who had taught her to tie a silk knot, the man who had shown her the difference between warp and weft, the man who had died with a woman's name written in his own blood on the marble steps, had been working for Astrid Blackwell all along. Not against her. For her. The rain blurred everything. The gas lamps became halos. The streetlights became stars. The city dissolved into watercolor, and she was 7 years old again, sitting on her father's lap, watching him repair a broken clock, his hand steady, his voice soft, telling her that everything could be fixed if you had the right tools and enough patience. Everything could be fixed. Except this. She stopped running. She leaned against a lamppost, her forehead pressed to the cold iron, her breath shuddering in her chest, and she let herself feel it, the grief, the betrayal, the terror, the rage, the love, the confusion, all of it tangled together like a silk knot with three crossings and a hidden loop, impossible to untie without cutting. A carriage passed. The driver did not slow. The wheels splashed through puddles and sent spray onto her coat, and she did not move. She stood there in the rain, holding onto the lamppost like it was the only thing keeping her upright, and she thought about her father's hands. Steady, precise, patient. Had he been patient when he made the deal? Had he sat at that table, across from the woman who would eventually kill him, and negotiated his own complicity? Had he chosen her safety over his honor? Had he chosen her life over his conscience? And if he had, what did that make her? She was not more than her father's daughter. She was her father's daughter, exactly, completely, irrevocably, the girl he had protected, the secret he had kept, the reason he had sold himself to Astrid Blackwell. The rain fell harder. The gas lamps flickered. And Pearl Casey stood on a street in the Lower East Side, holding onto a lamppost, and tried to figure out how to be the person her father had died to make her. A shadow moved at the edge of her vision. Not the man in gray coat. This was different, smaller, quicker. A rat, perhaps, or a cat, or nothing at all. She turned her head. Nothing. Just the rain, the dark, the empty street stretching away in both directions like a needle's thread leading nowhere. She pushed off the lamppost. Her legs were steady now. Her mind was clear, clearer than it had been in months. Her father had been protecting her, from the inside. He had been working for Astrid Blackwell to keep her safe while he investigated or tried to investigate or whatever it was he had been doing in those final months. And now he was dead, and the evidence was scattered, and the notebook was gone, and Astrid Blackwell was in the Lower East Side making deals with seamstresses, and Pearl had nothing. Nothing except the truth. And the truth was a weapon. She just had to decide who it was aimed at. She turned west toward the river, leaving the silence behind her.